I speak to you in the name of the one true and living God, our Creator, our Redeemer, and our Sustainer. Amen. Jesus came and stood among his disciples. Anywhere else in the gospel story, and this would not be a strange statement. After all, it had occurred countless times before this particular moment. Yet this time was different. This time, the presence of Jesus in the midst of his disciples was not only unexpected, but it was seemingly impossible. Now, we need to remember it comes as no surprise to us, because we know the story. But imagine, if you can, that you don't know the story, that you are there in that locked room with the disciples on that day. Disciples who have shut them off from the rest of the world because they are afraid. They are afraid that the same fate that has happened to Jesus may happen to them as well for following him. And not only are they afraid, they are in despair. Their friend, their teacher, their master, they believe, is dead. The person in whom they had put their trust, the person whom they believed to be the Messiah, whom they had given up everything to follow, was gone. The story in which they had invested their lives appeared to be over. And they had been wrong. They had felt that in following Jesus, he would lead them to liberation. Now, their hopes dashed. They fear it may lead them to certain death. Now, it might be difficult for us to imagine ourselves in the place of the disciples. After all, how many of us have risked our lives for something that we believed in or followed after? How many of us have ever seriously been threatened for our beliefs? How would our lives of faith be challenged and ultimately changed if our lives were actually on the line? But in the midst of their fear, in the midst of their despair, Jesus came and stood among his disciples. And how astonished they must have been. Jesus, the one whom they believed was not only their Messiah, but their friend, was alive and standing there in their very midst. How could this be? What great reversal beyond the bounds of possibility had occurred in the natural order of things? And Jesus must have sensed their bewilderment. The first words he spoke to his friends were, "Peace be with you," reassuring them that his presence in their midst was not an illusion or a hallucination. Reassuring them that he really was alive, that their belief in him had not been misplaced, that the story was not over, that their hopes had been resurrected with Christ. Now, the disciples must have wondered what exactly this would mean for them. What will the continuation, this resurrection of their shared story, require of them? And Jesus, again, sensing their innermost questions and concerns, repeated, "Peace be with you." And then continuing, "As the Father has sent me, so I send you." Jesus tells the disciples that they cannot remain locked up in that room. and whatever comfort and safety it may have provided. He reminds them the story isn't over, and because of this, their story wasn't over yet either. That this was always the plan, and that now they would need to shake off their fear, shake off their despair, open the door, and go out. Go out into the world and share the good news of the resurrection with everyone. When Jesus came among them, they were afraid. They were in a state of despair. But now that Jesus is there with them, and now that Jesus has given them a task, a responsibility, to go forth and proclaim the resurrection, I wonder if they might not now be even more afraid. Now that they've been given a responsibility, now that the implications of the story are becoming clear to them. And I wonder how you or I might respond if we had been gathered there with them. Even today, for many of us, sharing our faith with others can be an uncomfortable experience. We make ourselves vulnerable to ridicule, to dismissal. But at least most of the people we would encounter in our day-to-day lives would not be completely unfamiliar with this story. The story of Jesus's life, death, and resurrection. So imagine yourself among those disciples being told to go out and tell others the unthinkable, the impossible, to go out and proclaim the resurrection to those who had never heard the story before. You could imagine how the disciples would have been uneasy at the reception that they likely would have received. Mockery, derision, perhaps accusations of blasphemy. But certainly, they would have been greeted with disbelief. How could they not be greeted with disbelief? What they were saying simply defied reason, defied logic. It was impossible. And so we shouldn't be that surprised that the one disciple who was not there that first time that Jesus appeared among them should have difficulty believing the news that they share with him, that Jesus had appeared to them. Now, Thomas often gets a bad rap. We who have the benefit of reading the story with a fuller knowledge of what would occur can too easily dismiss Thomas's unbelief, assuming that we would have been less hesitant to believe or more faithful in our resistance of reasonable doubt. And we do that all the time, don't we? Being quick to judge those who somehow weren't as strong, weren't as faithful, weren't as courageous in a particular situation, certain that if we had been in their shoes, we somehow would have done the right thing. Of course, that's easy to say. Much more difficult to actually do. But we need to ask ourselves this Sunday, is doubt always a weakness? Or is it simply an opportunity, a space, a possible fertile ground in which faith might grow and ultimately blossom? I'd be fairly certain that if you are like me, there have been times when you have doubted. There have been times when you have had questions. And when these questions have tested your faith, I expect that's a near universal human experience. Yet if we reflect back on those times of doubt, those times of questioning, certainly in my experience, I find myself coming out of those periods not with my faith weakened, but with my faith strengthened. The question is, are we willing to live the questions? Are we willing to live through them, wrestle with them, work through them? Or do we simply push them aside, refuse to give them a second thought? Simply accepting whatever we're told? Or simply coming to church and mouthing words that we're not sure whether we believe or not, but which we refuse to wrestle with, which we refuse to work through? I've said before that for me, the opposite of faith is not doubt. The opposite of faith is certainty. If you've worked it all out, if you have all the answers, if you are 100% confident in everything you think and do, you don't need faith, do you? After all, what is faith? Faith ultimately is trust. Do you trust in God? Do you trust in God's promises? Even in those times when you doubt, even in those times when you have questions, that's real faith. Again, if you're a unique individual who has all the answers and are 100% confident, well, you're just that, you're a unique individual. I'm reminded of the words of Francis Bacon, the English philosopher who stated in one of his books, The Advancement of Learning, "If a man will begin with certainties, he shall end in doubts. But if he will be content to begin with doubts, he shall end in certainties." Perhaps Thomas understood this when he said, "Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands and put my finger in the mark of the nails and my hand in his side, I will not believe." Thomas knew what had happened to his friend and Messiah. He, like the other disciples, had carried the weight of fear and doubt that came from having his hopes dashed. He had not seen the resurrected Jesus as the others had, and he would not be satisfied until he had seen him with his own eyes. He simply could not take someone else's word for it. And can we blame him? Honestly, who among us would not have responded in a similar fashion? A week later, the disciples were gathered together again in the same house where they had last seen Jesus. Only this time, Thomas was with them. During the last encounters, the doors of the house were locked, but we're told this time that the doors were only shut. And perhaps this small detail offers some clue that while the disciples still desired safety, their encounter with the risen Lord had begun to work a transformation in them. They no longer feel the need to lock the doors. They're simply shut. And the doors have already been opened, and they have already gone forward. True, they have retreated back to that sanctuary, to that refuge. But their confidence in the risen Jesus is growing. Once again, Jesus came and stood in the midst of his disciples, and again he greeted them, saying, "Peace be with you." And then he turns and addresses Thomas directly and says, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Do not doubt, but believe." Now, the Greek word we translate for doubt here means unfaithful or faithless, without trust in God. So Jesus is touching on something deeper here than Thomas simply doubting that the person of Jesus was no longer dead and had resurrected. Jesus was touching on Thomas's lack of trust that the God who had sent Jesus into the world and who was capable of resurrecting not only Jesus, but the entire creation. Thomas's doubt had gone deeper. It's not simply that he doubts, he no longer trusts. He no longer trusts God. He no longer trusts that God's promises will be kept. And Jesus responds to him, "Do not doubt, but believe." Or even better translated, "Do not doubt, but trust. Trust me. Trust God. Overcome your doubts that are holding you back." Of course, this phrase, "do not doubt but trust," are aimed not only at Thomas, but also at all of those who encounter this passage and are struggling to believe that God is able to do the thing which God has promised, which is to call our world into a new and unending resurrected life. Thomas's lack of trust evaporates at that moment. And he responds, "My Lord and my God." And this too should be our response, as we so often find ourselves in Thomas's shoes, struggling to believe and remain faithful when the world around us seems hell-bent on its own destruction rather than resurrection and new life. One only needs to turn on the TV or to read the newspaper to have our trust eroded, to have our trust in a loving God, a forgiving God, a creator God, a God who is there and present with us in the midst of all that is unfolding around us. Jesus responds with all future generations, including us in mind, saying, "Have you believed? Have you trusted because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and have yet come to believe, have yet come to trust." Because what other choice do we have? If we do not trust in God's promises to us, what are we left with? We're simply left with ourselves, with our own individual wants or needs. Without trust in God's promises, we will find ourselves locked up behind closed doors, shut off from others and the world, living in fear and despair, in hatred and suspicion, because we will have no one but ourselves. We believe, we trust, not because we have seen Jesus' wounds or placed our hands within his side, but because we have seen Christ in the face of others. We have touched Christ when we have reached out to others. We have known Christ when we have forgiven others and have ourselves been forgiven. We know Christ when we come here and receive the sacrament, when we encounter God's word, when we go out and serve and love our neighbor. We encounter Christ when we love. Now, today is also Earth Day. We live on a dying planet. God gifted us with creation. God called us to be stewards of that creation. And the evidence is all around that we're not doing a very good job of it. And of course, every day we hear news of how we have damaged the earth, our home. Consequences of our actions. Another species disappears. Record flooding, record forest fires, the dying of the Great Barrier Reef, dwindling fish stocks. The evidence is all around. Polluted rivers, polluted air. The evidence is all around. But yet, for many of us, that evidence seems to be overwhelming. And rather than assume our responsibility, our God-given responsibility as stewards of creation, we, like the disciples, in our fear, in our desperation, in our doubt that there's anything that we can do, anything that I can do that will make a difference, we have locked ourselves away. Cut ourselves off. Chosen to be deliberately ignorant. Blind to what is happening. And like those disciples locked up in that room out of fear and desperation and doubt, saying, well, I need to look out for me. I need to protect me. So I'll just stay here, cut off. I won't bother myself with all of that. Cut ourselves off out of fear, and that fear paralyzes us, and we do nothing or little. We remain silent. But just as Jesus in that room told the disciples, peace be with you, and now get up, go out, and proclaim the truth of the resurrection, so too are we on this earth day called to get up, go out, proclaim, and do something. To take our responsibilities as stewards of the creation with which God has gifted us seriously. Not to say, well, there's nothing that I can do, or whatever I could do wouldn't make any difference, or just to lock myself away, I'm just going to pretend, la 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 la, I'm going to shut it all out and pretend it doesn't happen. Just ignore it. Well, that's not being good stewards of what God has gifted us. It's also not showing much trust or faith. And we need to remember that at the time of judgment, we will be held accountable. I'm quite sure on Judgment Day, it's not going to be like a catechist test, right? Recite the creed, recite the Lord's Prayer, da-da-da-da. It's going to be about, well, what did you do? What did you do with your life? How did you care with my gift? How did you care for my gift of creation? What did you do about it? Did you ignore it? Were you silent? Did you lock yourself away? Did you deny it? It's not happening. Give me the proof. Well, that's not enough proof. Give me more proof. So the story of the disciples in that upper room connects with what it means to be a disciple. A disciple means not to be locked up behind closed doors, shut off from the world, paralyzed by fear. To be a disciple means to open the doors to the world, to go out into the world and to proclaim the good news of Jesus' resurrection. But it also means to go forth as a disciple and be a proclaimer of a creator God who has gifted us so generously. And then to go forth as a steward of that creation. May it be so.